Thank you for listening to this sermon recorded at the Lost River Church of Christ. For more information, check out our website at lostriverchurch.org or call us at 270-843-3163. We consider it an honor to share the good news of Jesus Christ with you completely free of charge. Have a great day and enjoy the sermon.
Develop a great faith. We realize that God uses different things to grow faith within each and every one of us. One of the things that God uses to grow faith is our private spiritual disciplines, which is a fancy way of saying Bible reading, Bible study, prayer, meditation. These kinds of regularly practiced things are something that God uses to develop within us a greater trust and confidence in Him, and we'll walk on that journey of faith a little better than before. And we've been focusing on that the first quarter of this year. And we've read through the New Testament the first 90 days of the year. And I know that so many of us have indeed experienced a blessing and a strengthening of our faith as we have wandered or walked down that road together. But beginning today, we're focusing our attention on growing our faith by emphasizing another thing that God uses to develop faith within each one of us, and that is pivotal relationships. Pivotal relationships. It's probably true that if you look back in your life, you realize that there are certain people and certain relationships that you've had with those people that have been pivotal in turning you to a walk toward the Lord, with the Lord, that is greater in faith and confidence in Him. Maybe you remember a grandparent or your parents or a friend who said something, who was an example to you, an encouragement to you, and they led you to walk in faith in a way that you hadn't before. That's what we're going to be emphasizing over the next quarter. We're going to be speaking a lot on Sunday mornings about this. We're going to have some Sunday evening classes that are discussion-oriented, that are going to be about how we can foster and develop and grow those kinds of deep faith-building personal relationships. And so we hope that you'll be a part here with us in that. In order for a relationship to be maximally beneficial, and in order for it to flourish and to produce the faith that God wants out of those relationships, they really need to be long-term relationships, don't they? They need to be relationships that grow over time and that continue to flourish and are still there even after there's been a lot of ups and downs and testing. That's when we know that we've got a real relationship that's worth the while, that's meaningful, and that God can use to really, really make change in our hearts and to work change in the lives of other people. But how do we do that? How do we come to a place where we have long-term, enduring relationships? And one question that we should all ask ourselves as we launch into this study this morning is we should ask ourselves the question, do you have more used-tos than still-ares? Do you have more used-tos than still-ares? And by that I mean, do you say things like, they used to be my friend? Got a lot of people that used to be my friend. We were really close. We did this together. We hunted together. We fished together. We shopped together. You know, we raised our kids together. We did all these things together. But they used to be my friend, but now they aren't. Or even maybe more seriously, they used to be my spouse. And hopefully you don't say that there's more used to be's than still ours, but that's a possibility. And if so, it's something that we really, really need to ask this morning. We might say that that used to be my church, and that used to be my church, and over there I used to go to that church, but there's been a lot of used to be's, and they maybe even outnumber the still are's. Now I want to pause for just a moment, because I realize that sometimes there are situations where there may be good reason, really good reason, for there to be used to be's, and for them to even outnumber some of the still are's. Some relationships do need to end, and especially if we find ourselves in a relationship with what I call, or what the book of Proverbs calls, an evil person, a malicious person, a person of ill will and ill intent who's bent on our destruction and our harm. That is a relationship that we need to eliminate and that we ought to avoid. And especially if you are a young person, there's another kind of relationship that you guys need to be careful about. And that's a relationship where you like this person. Maybe they're not an evil person, but they're what Proverbs would call a foolish person. And you just find that through a relationship with them, you keep getting into more and more trouble. They seem to be pulling you in a direction that's harmful for the both of you. And maybe, if not forever, for a little while, that kind of relationship needs to be set aside. But what we want are relationships with wise people, with good people, and we want those to be long-term and lasting relationships. But sometimes we have to admit that even though we have relationships with decent people, if you look at many of the used-to relationships that you've ended, a lot of those relationships, if you're honest, and be honest this morning, we're at church, be honest this morning before God, and you acknowledge, you know, they were flawed, they weren't perfect, but they weren't an evil person. That wasn't a horrible person. That wasn't a malicious person. And maybe, you know, things happened that shouldn't have happened, and now it's a used-to-be relationship, and I really regret the fact that it's a used-to-be relationship. I wish it was a still-are relationship. And maybe today there's not a lot you can do about those things looking back in your past, but what you can do this morning is you can say, well, what about the relationships that I presently enjoy? The ones that I'm in right now this morning, my marriage, my friendships, the church that I attend, all of these things that are good things that God's brought into my life that He wants to use to build my faith, how can I prevent those from becoming the used-to relationships of tomorrow? How can I break the pattern that maybe has so often plagued my life? As relationships begin, they flourish, but then something happens and they end. And I don't want the ones that I'm currently engaged in to become used to relationships. And so this will be crucial for some of us this morning. Maybe all of us, because probably all of us have some relationship right now that's teetering, that's strained. And before we make that call, before we contact the attorney, before we send that final text that indicates this is the last text, before we terminate that relationship, maybe we ought to ask a question. Is there something that can be done? Is there some way that this relationship can be salvaged so that it doesn't have to become one more in a long, long list of used-to-be relationships? I believe that if we think about this, this chart on the screen will help us to sort of give an abstract concept to the problem that most of our relational breakups are based on. Wouldn't you agree that most of those used to be relationships in your past, there was this expectation that you had, or maybe that the other person had, about what a relationship should be, what this relationship should be like, and what I can reasonably expect from this person. And then over the course of time, maybe it was one big event, or maybe it was just a lot of different things accumulating over the years, That expectation, the gap between that and the realization, the performance of that person, your experience with that person, that gap just grew wider and wider and wider. And so finally, one day, whether it was deliberate or it just became the realization, you understood that's a used-to-be relationship. And as we think about that, usually what happens as we always run these kinds of things through a story in our own mind, we say, if I was on the dumping end of this ending of a relationship, if I'm the one that ended it, it's because I had expectations and they failed miserably to meet the expectations that were very reasonable on my part. Or if we're looking at it from the other standpoint and we were the one that got dumped, we look at that and we say, you know, my performance was fine. Yeah, it wasn't perfect, but it was good enough. But, you know, their expectations were just crazy. You know, they just had way too high expectations for me. And that's why things didn't work out. And so we usually focus on one or the other end of this, and there's some valid, I don't dispute any of that. But I want us to look at something this morning. That's the blue space, the arrow that points between the two. A place maybe that we haven't ever thought about before, that there may be something there that can help us to build a bridge between expectations and performance, between expectations and experience, that might enable us, even when that gap does appear, and even when it grows pretty wide, there might still be a way to maintain that relationship in a very useful and productive way. And that's what we're after this morning. I believe Jesus shows us that that is possible. And I hope that you're eager this morning to learn how. Jesus was the master of relationships, and he teaches us so, so much about them. One of the things that Jesus did as he walked around the earth was he gathered disciples, and you all know this. There were 12 friends or companions that became the close disciples of Jesus that would later be known as apostles. And Jesus really spent 3 years just pouring his life into these people. Just giving his life away by teaching them, by sharing with them, by exemplifying things with them, doing things for them, showing them the way. And so they were together all the time for the better part of 3 years as they traveled about, and Jesus did all the things that we read about in the Gospels, and they grew very, very close. These men were great friends, and they were great friends with Jesus. And the most famous of those friendships, if either Jesus and John or Jesus and Peter. Peter's probably more famous because he's such an identifiable character with all of us. We're all so many ways like Peter. But Peter had become one of these disciples. Jesus and Peter were very close and dear friends. They loved each other, and they had this great relationship that culminated at the end of that 3 years with a meal. Isn't that interesting how often that is the case? You know, around the calendar year, we have meals that we come together, and they're sort of the culmination of a year's events, and we celebrate those things. And that's a lot of what was going on at this meal. It was the Jewish Passover, and it was the last Passover that Jesus would ever celebrate on this earth, because he was shortly to be crucified. Just immediately after celebrating this meal with the disciples, he was going to be arrested and crucified. And so he gathers at this table with Peter and the other disciples, and they enjoy the Passover celebration. In that, he began to show them how that Passover supper would be transformed into what we today celebrate as the Lord's Supper. And he also did something that's just stunning to me. He looked around at the disciples, and there they all sat. They were all prettied up maybe for this celebration meal, but their feet were filthy because they had to walk on the dirty roads to come to the place where they were eating. And Jesus got a basin of water, and he filled it with water, and he took off his outer robe, and he tied a towel around his waist, and he got on his knees, and he washed the disciples' feet. Washed the grit and the grime down on his knees, washed his disciples' feet. And then after they had finished all of that and they enjoyed the meal together, it says they sang a song together. And they got up and they walked out a little distance away from where they had had dinner into a beautiful garden area where Jesus was going to spend some time with them in prayer. And as they journeyed along toward that garden, Jesus told the disciples something incredibly important. He said, "All of you are going to deny me tonight. Before this night's over, you're all going to deny me." He said, "The scripture says, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep will be scattered." And he said, "That's going to happen tonight." And in response to that, Peter, this dear friend of Jesus, Peter declared, "Even if everyone else deserts you," which had to kind of make the other disciples kind of upset, "but even if everyone else deserts you, Lord, I will never desert you." Now, this wasn't just some empty boast. Peter was a brave man, and Peter was a loyal friend. Peter loved Jesus, and when Peter said this, Peter absolutely meant it. He could not imagine a scenario in which the outcome would be, "I'm denying Jesus." Jesus, that is just not going to happen. And so Jesus replies to Peter, "I tell you the truth, Peter. This very night, before the rooster crows, you will deny 3 times that you even know me." "No," Peter insisted. "Even if I have to die with you, I will never deny you." And then, important to notice, all the other disciples, they said the same thing. And so they went into the garden, and there they prayed, and Peter and the others were so tired and sleepy that they fell asleep, and Jesus prayed, and then at the end of that process, Judas, the betrayer, came with an armed group of soldiers. And they took Jesus into custody. And when they did, Peter was ready. He was good at his word. And he drew a sword. And he swung it at the high priest's servant's head. And the high priest servant ducks just in time. And Peter shaves off his ear. And Jesus stops this. And he says, "No, Peter, put away your sword. If you live by that sword, you're going to die by the sword." And then Jesus willingly gave himself into the custody of the arresting mob. And Peter this just didn't fit with his concept of what Jesus was going to do and how this was all going to turn out. And so as they took Jesus away, he followed at a little bit of a distance and stayed in the shadows. And then Jesus was taken into the high priest's courtyard and into the high priest's palace. And Peter went up to the gate and he gained entrance there. There was a woman standing guard at the gate there. And when Peter entered in, the woman said to Peter, she said this, "You're not one of that man's disciples, are you?" And Peter says, No, I'm not. You know, and he probably at this point isn't really even processing this. He's just trying to, you know, get close to where Jesus is so he can see what's going on and monitor the situation. And he probably doesn't even think about what he said at this point. But then as he goes into the courtyard, it says it was cold. Do you feel that? It's cold. And so there's a charcoal fire, it says. And that's meaningful in John's description of this. There's a charcoal fire. And Peter goes up there and you can sort of smell that charcoal fire and you feel the warmth coming off of it. And he stands there and there's these other people standing around and somebody sees him. And no doubt they had seen him with Jesus prior to this. And they said to him, "You know, you're one of his disciples, aren't you?" And Peter said, No. "You've got the wrong guy." And again, a third time, somebody asks this question and Peter adamantly denies. He curses and he swears, "I do not know the man." And then the rooster crowed. And Peter went out and wept bitterly. Now, this isn't what you might call a simple mistake. You know, there's things that as friends we might reasonably expect from each other. But if, you know, our friend doesn't show up, not that big a deal. Not the end of the world if, you know, you don't show up for your friend's nephew's middle school graduation, right? He may have wanted you to show up, but not being there is probably not a relationship ender. But if they have a serious illness or death in the family or their house burns down, they expect you as a friend to be there. And certainly in a situation like this, after Jesus had just rehearsed this with him, he had every reason to expect that Peter would be good for his word and be there with and for Jesus. And so this is an epic failure. What we have here is a tremendous breach, a chasm between what could rightfully have been expected and what actually was performed, what actually happened. Here's the question for you and I to think about this morning. If it had been you in Jesus' position and Peter were one of your friends, what would you fill that space? What would you use to try to bridge that gap between expectation and performance? I think if we're being really honest with ourselves this morning, we think of words like, well, it'd be a lot of resentment. There might be an effort at seeking revenge, if possible. Going to even this score. Going to catch him in a position where he really needs something, and then I'm going to show him what it feels like to be betrayed. Certainly, we would all agree that distrust would be a part of this going forward. I'm never going to trust that guy again. Never going to trust that guy again. And here comes one of my favorite guys. He's going to kill me for this. I was at the drive-thru at Chick-fil-A last week. And I see some guy standing there with the ladies out taking orders. And I get up next to him. It's Stephen. And he's there to... He saw me coming. And he bought my lunch. So he's done me two big favors. But that's not the way Jesus responds to this, is it? In fact, we find something entirely different. As we go on in the Gospel of John, in chapter 21, we're told that the disciples, Peter, Peter leading them, goes to out to go fishing on the lake. Jesus has died, he's been buried, he's risen again. And the disciples are kind of at loose ends. They don't know exactly what to do with themselves. So Peter just says, well, let's go fishing. And their fishing wasn't like our fishing. They weren't out just angling on the shore. They got into a boat and they were trying to catch fish, maybe to make some money. And when they came to shore in the morning, because you fish at night, they got there, they found breakfast waiting for them. Fish cooking over, and notice this, a charcoal fire. And some bread. And Jesus served them the bread and the fish. So there is Jesus, and there's Peter at the same campfire, a charcoal fire. And haven't you noticed that when you find yourself in similar experiences, it reminds you of things that have happened in the past? Especially when you smell something, or you feel something, or you hear something. And there's Peter feeling the warmth of his cold body out fishing all night, standing near the fire, smelling those smells and seeing Jesus, and the tension had to be unbelievable. Last time I was in a situation like this, I was denying the one who's fixed me breakfast. And then it gets really interesting. Because Jesus says, when they finished eating, Simon, that was his name, Jesus named him, gave him the nickname Peter. Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, I don't know what you would have said. I don't know what I would have said. But Jesus said this to Peter. It's the most amazing thing imaginable. Jesus says to Peter, feed my sheep, feed my lambs. This cycle then is repeated a second time. And then a third time, Jesus says, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter was grieved because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. And Peter, and Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. What does Jesus fill the space between expectation and performance with? When he would have every reason to just be done with Peter, I'm so through with this relationship, I never want to see you again. Jesus instead fills that space, that vast space, with grace, with forgiveness, and with trust. Maybe most importantly of all, with trust. I think if you're going to have long-term relationships, you're going to have to find a way to do what your Lord and Savior Jesus did. If you're not a Christian, you don't have to do this. You can, and I would recommend it. But if you're a follower of Jesus, Jesus is setting an example for you here that you and I must seek to implement. And I'm so glad that Jesus does that with Peter, because there's been times we may want to look down at Peter and mock Peter. But there's been times what I've done is at least as bad, and I think in my case worse than what Peter has done. And I'm so glad that Jesus shows grace and forgiveness, but also trust. And that's really the thing that I want us to take away this morning as we try to make this application. Because Jesus doesn't just forgive Peter, but he says to him, feed my sheep, feed my lambs. This is what he's saying. Think about it. Peter, right when I needed you the most, right when I was counting on you to do what you said you were going to do, what you swore you would do, you utterly failed. Now, here's what I want from you, Peter. I want you to go out, I want you to tend and feed and defend the sheep that I just died to purchase. Can you do that for me? It's amazing. We might look at that and say, well, that's foolish. It's foolish to trust somebody who's let you down in the past. And you and I might think that, but when you look at the rest of the story, what do we find out about what Peter does with the trust that Jesus instills within him? Just a few days after this, Peter goes out to a crowd of people right there in Jerusalem where Jesus was crucified. And he stands up and with full voice he says to them, including those who had just crucified Jesus, including those that he had just denied Jesus before to save himself. Now he stands up and he says, "This Jesus whom you crucified is Lord and Christ. God has raised him up. I have seen him alive, and I'm bearing witness to it today. You can kill me if you want, but I know Jesus is the risen Lord and Savior of mankind." And he went on and he continued to preach the gospel. He preached the gospel to Jews. He preached the gospel to Gentiles. He wrote 2 or 3 books, 1 and 2 Peter, and he was probably the main influence behind the gospel of Mark. And he remained bold and faithful to Jesus until history tells us that under Nero's persecution, the Roman emperor, he still didn't back down and was crucified upside down. I think Jesus' investment of trust into someone who had utterly failed him proved to have been a remarkably productive and powerful decision. Big idea that I would want us to take away this morning is that, contrary to what we often think, you decide and I decide what goes into that space between expectation and performance. It's not just a given that because someone didn't deliver on their promise, because I had expectations and you didn't meet them, that means therefore this relationship is over. No. I still have the power, and Jesus shows me that I have the power to decide what goes into that space. And if we go into that space and we place distrust and we assume the worst about other people, I can guarantee you it's only going to be a little while before it's a used-to-be relationship. But if we assume trust, if we assume the best, if we believe the best, and assume maybe there's even a reason, then we can find a way to move forward and we can begin to trust one another again and again and again. And it might be amazing to see the productivity that God produces in developing our faith and in other good things as a result of our determination to stay in that relationship. Paul puts it this way. You want to know what love is? I want to know what love is. And we've all heard the song, "I want to know what love is," right? You really want to know what love is? We think we want to know what love is. Love is tough. Because it's like this. Love is a verb. And it's patient. It's kind. It doesn't envy. It doesn't boast. And we're like, "Oh, yeah, we got that. We got that." It's not proud. It's not rude. Okay. It's not self-seeking. Sure. It's not easily angered. Oh, that's a little bit tougher. It keeps no record of wrongs. Yikes. Because I've got a filing cabinet, you know, full of a record of wrongs. And that's not love, so I've got a problem because I think of myself as a loving person, but actually I cannot forget all the things. And then it gets really serious. Love doesn't delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. You know, it is so easy for us to just want to start believing the worst about people. Assuming the worst about people. I know why you said that. I know why you're late. I know where the money went. I know why you didn't do this or didn't show up there. We begin to assume all these things and we construct worst case scenarios and we put distrust into the gap between expectation and performance, and the relationships deteriorate and they fall apart. But love doesn't do that. Love protects. Love trusts. Always, he says, trusts. Love always hopes. Love always perseveres. And Jesus and his relationship and his restoring of Peter, not just to a place of, okay, you can exist on the periphery of my life, you can be in the margins, but no, I'm going to put you in a very central role to continue the mission that I came here to accomplish. What an amazing thing we learn about how relationships can sustain and flourish even through adversity and trial when we learn to follow in the footsteps of Jesus. So how do we do that? What do we do it? How do we do this practically going forward? Well, when there's a gap between what I expected and what I experienced, I need to do two things. Number one, I need to make the decision to choose to believe the best. I'm just going to decide ahead of time, anytime I'm entering into a relationship or think about the relationships that you have now, I'm making the decision today that I'm going to believe the best about this person. And if my experience falls so short of my expectation that it really begins to just erode away the trust that is there, here's the next thing I'm going to do. If I can't believe the best anymore, I'm going to immediately and directly come to you and talk to you about that fact. Now, most of us listen to that and say, well, you know, I don't really want to do that. I'm not good at confrontation. And I would say to you, that's good news. Have you ever been confronted by someone who was really good at confrontation? Have you ever been confronted by someone who just loved to confront? How well did they do at it, right? They're terrible. People who are good at confrontation are people who do not want to confront. But it's just gotten to be where there's this gap. I've tried my very best to believe the very best, to hope all things, to trust all things. And yet, I've got to clear this up. And so, that's why I'm here. I want to believe. I want to go forward. I want to maintain this relationship. And so, I'm coming to you to talk about this difference between what I was thinking was going to happen and what has actually happened. You know what I've experienced as I've tried to implement that in my life? I could not tell you how many times I've had to say these words. Oh, I didn't know that. Have you ever done that? You just, here's your expectation, here's what they delivered, and it was a big gap between the two, and you just knew, man, you just knew that you put the worst imaginable reason for that. There's no explanation. Then you finally do find out, either because you asked or somebody told you, and you come to the realization that there was things going on you had no idea about, and you had to say, oh, I didn't know that. And a lot of times that will help close the gap when we just find out, when we just ask the person, or maybe that person comes and just says, you know, I just utterly blew it. I need you to forgive me. And then we have the grace and the forgiveness to follow Jesus and do that and rebuild the trust and have relationships continue on. Because here's what I want for all of us. This is why I preach this sermon. Because I want you to be able to imagine the future you, the future you, the future me. I want to imagine who I am 5 years, 10 years, 50 years down the road. And when I get to that future version of me, I want to be not all alone because I couldn't maintain a relationship with people over the long run. Instead, I want to be surrounded by still ours, not used to be's. Used to be's don't bring you any comfort. There's no production, and God doesn't build a great faith through used to be relationships. God builds faith and builds good things out of still our relationships. And the only way still our relationships can happen is when we learn to trust one another. If you're not a Christian this morning, we want to encourage you to come to Jesus. You say, well, I've wandered too far. I've done too many things. The gap between what God would have any reason to expect from me and what I've actually done is just too broad. Well, I think you can see this morning that that is not the case. There is good news in the gospel. Jesus died for your sins. Not just for the little ones. Jesus didn't die because you had some little problems. Jesus died because you are a great sinner. And he died to redeem you. And he's risen again. And he's willing to receive you to himself. And if you want to come to him this morning, he will receive you. Confess your faith in him. Trust in him. Trust in his power to forgive you and to restore you to himself. If we can help you do that by helping you be baptized into Christ or in some other way, we ask that you let us know while we stand and while we sing.